This is KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Susan Franson. Dennis Hart is with us to bring news from the Ames Tribune and surrounding newspapers on the last day of November. Hello, Dennis.
Thanks very much. It's good to be back here on this Friday. Let's start our look back at the week's news with last Saturday's Ames Tribune, which reported on the crowds shopping at North Grand Mall on the day after Thanksgiving, which is known far and wide as Black Friday. The Trib reported that some of the shoppers were in the midst of a two-day spending spree, one that began Thanksgiving night. And the paper reported that while many shoppers were rushing around, the mall's Winter Wonderland, which is in the former Yonkers space, attracted children wanting to meet Santa. The Trib also had several stories previewing upcoming events. One of those upcoming events was snow. The paper warned that travelers heading home from the Thanksgiving holiday might have wanted to consider getting an early start or even leaving a day early, because much of central and southern Iowa was getting set for a snowstorm that was predicted to drop up to 6 to 8 inches on some parts of the state. Ames was predicted to be on the northern edge of the storm, and the manager of one hardware store in Ames said shoppers were stocking up on winter weather items such as shovels and tube sand. Of course, as we found out later, the snow warnings were a bit overblown for Ames. Another preview story involved the search for the next dean of the College of Engineering at Iowa State University. The search committee planned to hold two public sessions, starting this past Tuesday, to get input on what characteristics people want to see in the college's next leader. The second session will take place this coming Monday, December 3rd, in Howe Hall. The current engineering dean is retiring. The third preview story involved a Main Street business in downtown Ames, which was planning to hold a post-construction open house last Sunday. Quilting Connection had received a downtown facade grant from the City of Ames last March. The store's owner used the money to improve the store's entrance and to make other changes inside. And Saturday's Tribune also had a story about the new street superintendent in Nevada. 47-year-old Jeremy Reitel began his duties 2 weeks ago. He brings 22 years of experience in working for the Iowa Department of Transportation to his new position in Nevada. In addition to being in charge of streets, he will also serve as the Assistant Director of Public Works. Sunday's Trib reported that the Downtown Ames Group is looking for a new executive director. Cindy Hicks left after more than 3 years with Downtown Ames and took a marketing and communications job with the Seed Science Center at Iowa State University. Now the Downtown Group will be taking applications for her job through December 9th. Hicks is credited with expanding such events as the summer concert series Firefly Nights and the Foodies and Brew event, as well as such events as the Art Walk and Music Walk. One of her achievements was the rebranding of the Main Street Cultural District to Downtown Ames. Also Sunday, the Trib had word that the redevelopment of the former Kmart building near South Duff Avenue and 16th Street has moved a bit closer. The City of Ames has taken several procedural steps necessary to facilitate the building's renovation. No prospective tenants have been confirmed for the property, but it will be subdivided into a mix of sit-down restaurant, fast food, and retail, along with a climate-controlled mini-storage in the back. The former Kmart building has been vacant since Kmart closed in the fall of 2014. The parking lot has been used as excess parking for nearby businesses. Sunday's Trib also reported that the Ames Animal Shelter was offering office cat adoptions for stress relief to local businesses. Numerous studies have shown that an office cat can lower the stress levels of employees. An Ames shelter spokeswoman said it's another way for animals to get a forever home. And the Trib's website had word on Sunday about Iowa State University's come-from-behind victory against Kansas State on Saturday night at Jack Trice Stadium. The Cyclones won 42-38. Their final opponent of the regular season will show up tomorrow at Jack Trice. That opponent is Drake University. The Trib is not published on Mondays. Tuesday's Tribune reported that a Story County judge had granted a request for a new lawyer for the man accused of killing Iowa State University student Celia Barkin Arosemena. 22-year-old Colin Richards had filed a motion asking for a new lawyer because of a communication issue with his previous attorney. The judge said she would appoint a new attorney from the state public defender's office in Marshalltown. Richards' trial is set to begin next April. If he's convicted of first-degree murder, he faces life in prison without parole. Tuesday's paper also had word that the presidents of Iowa's three public universities are asking state lawmakers for more money next year. They would like state funding increased to nearly $500 million. That request is a boost of nearly 4% over the current funding of $481 million. The funding would provide $221 million for the University of Iowa, $177 million for Iowa State University, and nearly $100 million for the University of Northern Iowa. Meanwhile, another story in the Trib reported that Iowa State University's College of Engineering is launching a cybersecurity engineering major next fall. It will be a Bachelor of Science degree program, and it will be the first of its kind in the state of Iowa. But even though the official major is new, Iowa State has been teaching and researching cybersecurity for more than 20 years. Students who major in it will get a strong foundation in computer engineering concepts while applying engineering methods to solve complex cybersecurity problems. Tuesday's paper also had word that a Nevada High graduate, who is now the flight operations manager at the Davenport Army Aviation Support Facility, was the honored speaker recently at a Nevada Senior Center potluck. Corey Crane said he was honored to be there and to be in the presence of World War II, Korea, and Vietnam veterans. He said, in his words, "Every day we put on the uniform is an honor." Crane graduated from Nevada High in 1994 and said growing up in Nevada was fun, that there was always something to do. As for his current job, he said he loves working on aircraft. Also Tuesday, the Trib had a feature story about a new quilt shop that's been opened in a historic downtown home in Story City. The new place is called So Tempting, with the word so spelled S-E-W. It's at 407 Broad Street. The store is in a renovated 1912 house, and it will feature a variety of yarn and fabrics, and will also sell sewing machines. Wednesday's paper reported on what a panel of national journalists said at Iowa State University this week when they showed up to analyze the results of the November midterm elections. They covered a variety of topics, including, of course, President Trump and his impact on the election outcomes, and they told stories from the campaign trail. They also took questions from the audience at Iowa State's Memorial Union Great Hall. You can read all about who said what in Wednesday's Tribune. Wednesday's paper also reported that the Boone Valley Brewing Company has started brewing a beer for a campaign to support communities affected by wildfires that have devastated part of California. Boone Valley's efforts will be part of the more than 24 breweries in Iowa that are taking part in the campaign. Proceeds from the beer's sale will go toward the rebuilding effort in California. Wednesday's paper also had word that the Iowa State University Spirit Squad was holding tryouts this past week to find two people to become the university mascot. A current mascot, Mitchell Nelson, said he wanted to be Cy because he's loved going to football games since he was 8 years old. Being Cy, he said, is the most fun he's ever had. He did not reveal all of the secrets of being the mascot, but he did say that wearing that costume does make it hot inside. And Wednesday's paper reported that the Ames Chamber of Commerce and its affiliates had announced their 2018 annual award winners in several categories. Among those winners, Julie Weeks of the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau was chosen Business Person of the Year, and Ryan Newstrom of Cornbread Barbecue was chosen Entrepreneur of the Year. You can read all about the winners in Wednesday's paper and how they'll be honored at a chamber event on December 17th. Thursday's Tribune, yesterday's, reported that the City of Ames will start looking at options for improving Internet service to its residents, including a possible jump into the Internet business itself. During Tuesday's City Council meeting, council members heard from several residents who expressed concerns about unreliable Internet service. Assistant City Manager Brian Phillips said an online survey conducted last year showed that many residents are unhappy with their service. He outlined several options, including one in which the city would own and operate the Internet infrastructure. Another option involves the city installing the infrastructure and leasing it to providers. And yet another option involves the city partnering with other entities in the community to provide Internet service. The council approved several motions, including having city staff research the cost of conducting a feasibility study about all of this. Yesterday's Trib also reported that REG, the Ames-based biofuels company, announced it will commit $250,000 to the Boys and Girls Club of Story County. Company officials said the gift will be paid over 5 years and enable the club to help Story County youth meet today's challenges and overcome tomorrow's obstacles. The commitment is the largest the Boys and Girls Club has ever received from a company. Thursday's Trib also reported that Republican State Representative Rob Bacon of Slater had been named chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee for the upcoming session. The Trib also had word that legendary Iowa Hawkeyes quarterback Chuck Long shared stories from his biographical book at the Erickson Public Library in Boone. Long recalled his memories of playing under College Football Hall of Fame coach Hayden Fry, calling Fry an excellent communicator. And closer to home for Iowa State football fans, coach Matt Campbell was named the Big 12's co-coach of the year, sharing the honor with Oklahoma's Lincoln Riley. League coaches choose the coach of the year. Campbell won the award outright last year. And that is your summary of the week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, reminding you that I'll be right back here on Monday with a look at news from around the state of Iowa. In the meantime, I hope you have a great weekend. We'll be right back.
In case you just tuned in, this is Local Talk, and we've just heard a summary of local news with Dennis Hart. Since Dennis had so much Christmas news, I ended his reading with a Swedish Christmas carol from an old CD I received from a Swedish friend many years ago. He was a singer in the choir that was recorded, and the Swedish CD is one of our family favorites to ring in the season. But not all the local news is seasonal, and one article that appeared in the Nevada Journal just yesterday has raised quite a few questions among people I've met recently. I'll read from Marlis Barker's article as it appeared in the Nevada Journal and the Ames Tribune and the Tri-County Times in recent days. Front page headline: Story County Officials Receive Applications for 3 Hog Confinements. The Story County Board of Supervisors officially accepted applications for 3 proposed hog confinements during their meeting Tuesday and spent much of the meeting reviewing the processes and procedures that are in place to deal with the applications. The board also set a public hearing date for 10 a.m. on Tuesday, December 11th, during its regular meeting in the second floor supervisors' meeting room at the County Administration Building in Nevada. By formally accepting the applications, it puts mandated procedures and timelines into effect. All 3 confinements are proposed to be in Richland Township, north of Nevada, and each of the 3 will contain 5,000 hogs. The facilities are proposed to be located in sections 10, 28, and 29 of Richland Township. Scott Henry of Longview Pork is the person who signed the application for all 3 facilities. Surrey County Supervisors Chair Rick Sanders said that in 2015, the county instituted a process that incorporated more staff members into the, quote, scoring, unquote, of each application and, quote, let us have more eyes, quote, on that scoring. The scoring is a system laid out in a master matrix by the state for a variety of categories that, in the end, answer the question, is this a suitable site for one of these facilities? Margaret Janes, Director of Environmental Health, officially presented the applications to the board. And then the article continues with the procedures. Rather than reading from them, we thought we would talk to some people who've been involved with the Master Matrix, starting with Margaret Janes.
My name is Margaret Janes, and I am the director of the Story County Environmental Health Department, and I've been director since 2009, and I've worked for the county since 1993.
So have you had to look at a lot of applications for CAFOs?
When DNR gets an application for a construction permit, over 1,000 animal units, then the master matrix kicks in, and I have done 10 so far. And some of them come in and they need manure management plans, but they do not have a large enough facility that qualifies them for a master matrix. And an example of that would be the Rock Star that was intended to be built south of Hickory Grove Lake, but then they pulled out because of public outcry, I believe.
What are the issues in manure management?
The issues in manure management, and people have to be certified as operators to do this. So the important things is groundwater protection and stream water protection. So setbacks to streams, tile intakes, wells are what's really important for water quality. Most folks do knife it in the same day as it's applied. So in other words, they incorporate it in the soil so you don't have to worry about the runoff as much because it's already incorporated into the soil as opposed to just spraying it on top. And that is the best thing to do with that, the best for the soil and for protecting the water. My concern and what I would possibly change, if I were queen, I would change setbacks for manure to water bodies. I met DNR on site, all three of them, last Monday, the 26th, and they're very isolated sites as far as CAFOs are concerned. They easily meet the setbacks to the houses, to streams, to wells, just about all those distances that are required, plus an additional setback. Those points were easily earned on the master matrix just by the siting fact alone.
Do you have any comments on those determinants in the matrix? Do you think they're adequate?
I think that the setbacks should be increased to water bodies. And I think the setbacks should be at least a 2 mile, match up with that 2 mile fringe around municipal boundaries. I think that the ones that are going in, the people, I've talked to a lot of Nevada citizens here because, the ones going in Richland 28 and 29, they are within that 2 mile radius that we notify people. And there's a lot of concern about property values going down and just enjoyment of life with the smell of manure. And in addition to that, some of the manure land application sites are right up next to city limits. And that is, the farmer's right because they own farm ground. They own that farm ground. The Henrys who are putting in these CAFOs or proposing to put in these CAFOs, they own that land. That is their right, and they do need to add soil amendments. So they're perfectly within their right, but, it just seems like it's a little too close to cities.
Now, if you were testifying at the hearing, what would you say?
My job at the hearing is to be the fact collector and presenting the score to the Board of Supervisors.
If when you make the recommendations, you obviously don't make the decision. How is the decision made?
The decision is made at the public hearing. The Board of Supervisors oversees the meeting, and so the committee that scores the master matrix submits the score to the Board of Supervisors. And based on the score and based on comments received from the public, written and spoken, the Board of Supervisors can recommend it be approved or disapproved by the Department of Natural Resources, DNR. And the decision is not theirs either. The decision is totally in the hands of the DNR, not the Board of Supervisors and not Environmental Health. So when DNR receives that information, then they will not review the master matrix if they get a passing score from the county. So they will make their decision based on comments alone, basically, and go from there. So I think comments are very, very important, but I don't know how much weight really holds with DNR.
Well, thank you very much. And I think that's very important because what we're trying to do is inform people who have concerns that they can make comments.
Oh, yes. When people call in, I say, that's an important point. Please come to me and let your voice be heard. But anyway, so the county really wants the public to know that we are really just the information gatherers. And then we send it up the flagpole to DNR. And okay. They are the ones to make the decision.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye, Margaret. To find out more about the Master Matrix, which seems so important, we called one of its original authors, Mark Kuhn.
Yes, my name is Mark Kuhn. I'm a farmer in Floyd County, Iowa. I'm currently a member of the Board of Supervisors, and I served 12 years as a member of the legislature, so I have a broad interest in the issue of livestock confinement. served on this issue my entire term in the legislature, and so I had experience as a county supervisor. So I have a broad range of experience and knowledge on the issue. I'm a farmer to boot, so I understand the issue on all sides.
And I understand that you were involved in February 2002 when the Master Matrix was first introduced.
It was the last time that a bill was drafted to overhaul Iowa's confined livestock regulations, and I was the ranking member of the House Ag Committee, and so I was appointed to represent the minority party on this committee that was formed in 2002, and eventually that committee led to the creation of the Master Matrix as we know it today. And so I had a working knowledge of how it was created, and I've seen it work, and it failed. It really is a pass-fail test that has failed Iowans, and I think there's some real reason that it needs to be reviewed and reworked.
It sounds like you are the most knowledgeable person about what the strengths and weaknesses are. And do you have ideas about how to improve it?
Yeah, certainly. There are actually a couple people who, with an intimate knowledge and working knowledge, they're still in the legislature. The other is Senator David Johnson, and he introduced a lot of bills this year that proposed to make some changes that I supported. Really, what happens is the DNR records show that only 2% of all the applications have ever been denied. So it creates a system whereby counties are supposed to be given input, but not any real determination of where siting goes. And they do this through these three criterias, and producers are required to have a minimum score in each of the three criterias. And that all sounds well and good, but DNR's own research has proven that through the years.
But even with the proving that it doesn't work, they still approve almost all of the ones that come to them.
Well, yeah, 98% of them, and the supervisors have really or lack of ability to do anything about it. As long as the applicant scores the required number of points, they can't object. And just one of the things that ties the hands of the supervisors. For instance, of these questions that are asked, it's easy to score points on the separated distance from certain structures. And it seems to be easy to even score points on some of the waterways and our water bodies. A lot of people do that. But when it comes to actually creating a system that requires producers do something about the air emissions from their CAFOs or any potential threat that an individual county might have, there's no way to score that. So the DNR's own research has shown that so many people score on a lot of these points. For instance, having a concrete manure storage structure tank provides a lot of points on the matrix, but it's common practice in the industry. But yet there are hardly any peak of applications that score on putting filters in front of fans to reduce the odor. And so that's why I say, on their own, based on their own analysis of it a few years ago, it really hasn't provided the hope that we would when we passed it, that this was some method of the counties to get more input. But really, as I said, it hasn't been changed in 16 years. And it really needs to be looked at because we have such an influx of CAFOs now in Iowa. And there's been a lot more since the law was adopted in 2002. And, you know, anything after 16 years needs to be reworked. And certainly people that live near CAFOs have a real legitimate concern about air quality, about the quality of their water. And there are unique environmental characteristics in certain counties. I'm sure there are in Story County, just like there are in Floyd County, that need to be protected. We have 750 impaired water bodies in the state, and many of them are affected by E. coli. And that's bacteria that comes from livestock confinements and other sources. And we really need to get a handle on that. That's a primary issue for the future of Iowa.
Well, do you have any suggestions?
Well, yeah, we're just to get back to the matrix, it absolutely has to have a new review and consideration. We've been calling for it. In fact, Floyd County is one of 22 counties in the state of Iowa that have now called on the DNR and the legislature to make changes to the matrix, impose a moratorium on new site construction until the number of impaired waterways is reduced, or other form of action calling on the legislature to do something. And to date, those cries have all been ignored. And so I can certainly understand people who live by near CAFOs and their quality of life is affected and their health. They're upset with that, but there really isn't a place that they can turn. The legislature hasn't agreed to take this issue up since 2002 when it was first drafted and implemented. It deserves a look, important to our future. The livestock industry is important to Iowa. We have to make sure it grows in places that are sustainable, and we really have to pay more attention to the people who live nearby them, because most often it's not the people that own the hogs, or it's not the people that are profiting from the sale and marketing those. This is why you hear people objecting, and hopefully that county supervisors review these applications on a case-by-case basis.
That's exactly what's happening right here in Story County. And we talked with a one of the candidates for the legislature who was defeated. And she talked specifically about the problems of differences in soils and mentioned Floyd County. And I think she'll probably be describing that. But I would think maybe you might have some on the ground knowledge of that.
I do. As a farmer, I'm well aware of the topography in Floyd County. It's unique. It's called karst topography. And we have good, rich soil, but it's shallow in many spots of the county. Shallow underneath that good, rich soil is a layer of fractured bedrock. And so contaminants, any contaminant from a river, from a farm, from a business that enters into this karst topography, it goes directly into our drinking water. Our drinking water is a source of the aquifer for about the eastern half of Iowa. And so this possibility of a direct conduit of any contaminant, whether it be manure, farm chemicals, industrial waste, is a real threat to the drinking water supply. So that's a unique characteristic that we have in our county. And there are others in other parts of the state. So these really don't get to come into play in any form in the matrix, and the counties can't add any criteria to them. So that's one of the concerns we have here. We also have ag drainage wells, and we're closing them because we don't want to provide a source of entry for any farm. This drainage wells are what the tile water is drained into. And so, you know, it's likely to have contaminants of pharma chemicals and fertilizers in it, nitrates. So we're working very hard to clear all those and clean and close them, and we've been pretty successful at that. But this issue of our drinking water supplies is critical to our future. So that's why every component that provides a possible contaminant to that drinking water supply should be reviewed and required to eliminate it. Our large livestock industry. So there's a lot of pressure to maintain that. And so it's an uphill fight in the legislature, but nobody needs to give up. That's the only way we make change, and we have to make our voices heard. But we thought we offered many compromise positions. This a notion that we just would even call the group of stakeholders back together that originally came up with all these questions and have them review them and sit down and have a review of all the answers in all those 16 years that this has been in effect. And even those calls were just not even addressed by the majority party. And so keep speaking up and good luck. You know, I'm retiring after 26 years of public service. I've worked on this issue through most of those years, and I'm a farmer. I understand its impact in the local community, and there are solutions. We can do better, but we have to learn that can't continue with this this steady growth that we're at now and expect to be able to protect our air and the water and the fish, trout streams that we fish in and the rivers and the lakes that we recreate in. It's too precious a resource.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. Pat Schlarbaum brought Brenda Brink, member of Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement and a recent candidate for the Iowa State Senate.
And joining us in our studio, this is Pat Schlarbaum with KHOI, is Ms. Brenda Brink. And here with Susan Franson. And thank you for taking the time to come in and talk to us about these confinement animal feeding operations. And let's kind of focus on your involvement with the master matrix of this legacy.
I'm Brenda Brink, and I live near Huxley. I've been involved with Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement and their Action Fund. I was part of the group through that pushed for strengthening the master matrix. That didn't go anywhere. We wanted greater separation distances.
So the master matrix is what the farmers basically fill out.
The applicants, yeah. Some of us don't really think of them as farmers. We think of them basically as pieces in a big wheel of industrial agriculture that are not necessarily what we always think of as family farmers, but they have to satisfy the master matrix when they get above a certain level of animal
units. And that's
units.
Essentially the paperwork
right.
that is created to justify their intent of putting up one of these facilities, coming on 13 years ago now, that the master matrix came into play. And it was legislators that basically created the guidelines for siting these facilities that would govern the Department of Natural Resources overview and of the regulatory agency. So now we have a master matrix, and we have people like yourself that are looking at this master matrix principle and realizing it has some shortcomings. What would you like to see changed in the master matrix process?
Well, some of the basic concepts are that there are points given, and the applicants get to choose which categories they go for points in. So it's entirely up to them which categories. And when you look at the scoring, they only need to get half, which in anybody's book, if you had a test and you got half of the points, that's a failing grade.
Mm-hmm.
So right there, we need to up the ante. These particular operations are getting by with very few. It's a low bar. It's a low bar. And we've seen these go in places where, for example, there was a bed and breakfast and a resort area, and they went in right next to them because it wasn't considered a commercial area, even because it was only operating seasonally. These are the sort of things that need to be strengthened, because what happens is the master matrix is not protecting the people who were there first.
Very good point. Okay, is there other things that needs to be brought into this discussion? We have more and more of these applicants going to our Story County Board of Supervisors.
Right. Well, there could be a number of things that could be strengthened on it. The other thing is there need to be greater separation distances from places where people congregate. Again, there's discrepancy between what the applicant thinks is a public use area and what the public thinks in their commonwealth thinks is a public use area. So that all needs to be strengthened so that when the public goes to use an area, they're not confronted with that nuisance and that health problem of the CAFO. The other thing is when we look at the certain types of soil that are allowed, some of these parts of the master matrix are not even a mandatory point thing. In other words, again, the applicant gets to choose where to get their points. And so if they decide not to choose the area that talks about karst soil, so if there's a karst area, which is common in northeast Iowa, where there are huge holes, this is an area which is subject to, for example, sinkholes, then that animal waste will go right down in the water system. I think we're seeing a problem with water concerns as it is. So when these operations are allowed to build in places where they don't have the proper soil to even accept the so-called nutrients and put them where they're supposed to go, which is for crop operation, it just kind of defies logic.
Yeah, so a producer would have, or a farmer would have, a confinement animal feeding operation with a big pit lagoon that's filled with the effluent or the waste products, and then a couple times a year, that waste product is spread on the adjoining agricultural fields. And if you've got a karst topography that includes sinkholes, you've got almost a hypodermic situation of that waste encountering our sub-moisture, the water in our water table. And once that is in there, you've really kind of created an untenable situation for those of us that want to have clean water. So the soil types are really, you feel, are not being addressed where the effluent is being spread across the landscape.
The cards are stacked, the deck is stacked in the favor of the applicant instead of the people that have to deal with the results.
That will require legislative action, and you were a candidate for this. Does our current legislature have the capacity to address the master matrix shortcomings now that we've been saddled with it for 13 years?
The current legislature, with the history that we have seen, is reluctant to open up the master matrix. And in fact, in many cases, the legislators I've talked to don't believe there's even a problem. So it's near impossible to get anywhere with this.
What is the one thing that Brenda Brink would like to see initiated in the master matrix arena that we can all benefit from and move forward with?
I don't think there's one thing that I would say for the master matrix arena other than I believe that we need a moratorium on new and expanding factory farms, CAFOs, because with the reluctance of our elected officials, including the current legislators from this area, to deal with it, the rest of us are left with declining property values. Asthma rates will go through the roof of our children, our elderly, and respiratory problems. There are a number of issues that are health-related that are going to affect the local communities in their emergency room and local hospitals in their ability to move forward as a community, because we need a moratorium until we can figure out how the master matrix could be strengthened to actually protect the people who live there first.
Thank you, Brenda Brink. Thank you for all that you do for this community.
You're welcome. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And we are in fundraising mode. Is there something you'd like to include with the opportunity that Community Radio provides a voice such as yours?
I encourage everybody to be members of KHOI because this is, again, a community program. It's not bound to profit. It's run by the people who support it. And, of course, that will be the concerns of the community that they bring forward, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, we're trying to strengthen community through communication, and your voice is loud and clear. Thank you, Brenda.
Well, thank you, Pat.
Thank you, Brenda, for that tribute. We hope all our listeners either are or will become members. We've raised $20,000 of our fall fundraising goal, but we still need to break into our programs to remind you that we still need you if you haven't already made a contribution. If you are already a member, we encourage you to think about becoming a sustaining member at $20 or more per month. The easiest way to do that is to go online at khoifm.org and push the yellow donate button. Most of the season's plays opened last week, but the Ankeny Community Theater will be opening Your a Good Man, Charlie Brown this Thursday. Appropriately, we don't have the director to tell us about it. We have the character playing Snoopy. Let's hear from her.
My name is Melody DiRigata. I am playing the role of Snoopy in Ankeny Community Theater's You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. The show is running December 7th through the 16th.
Did you know that C.Y. Stevens was going to be doing a Charlie Brown Christmas this year?
We were aware of that. That's actually part of the reason we decided to do the musical You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, instead of Charlie Brown Christmas, because they're two very different stories.
What is the story of You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown?
Well, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown is told episodically. So that means that there's not a huge through line. The idea is that they want to make it reminiscent of the comic strip. So basically, the whole show is compiled of little vignettes, which are scenes and songs, some of them directly from the comic strip. It's basically a day in the life of Charlie Brown. So you've got, you know, the random philosophical thoughts he has. You have Snoopy at supper time. You have Beethoven playing his songs. And you have Lucy, yes. The roles in Charlie Brown are so iconic. And they mean a lot to a lot of different people. You know, so many people grew up watching the TV specials or reading the comic strips. So to see someone you love taking on that role, I think it's very sweet and sentimental.
My recollection of Snoopy is the philosopher on top of the doghouse.
Yes, that is pretty accurate.
Do you spend a lot of time on top of the doghouse in the play?
So much time on top of the doghouse. I've spent a lot of rehearsals figuring out like different positions to make it visually appealing.
Maybe more comfortable, too.
They do a pretty good job. If you get it the right way, it can be pretty comfortable.
So what are some of your favorite lines?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, my lines or in the show in general?
Well, in the show in general, but you'll have to explain who's talking. Is there anything special that has happened during your rehearsals?
I'd say the coolest thing is that at the beginning, we were all kind of like wary of each other because none of us really knew one another. But now we've become like a total family and we like to go out and do things and have fun. And we've become really, really close, which has been just really cool to watch.
Well, if my co-host, Paul Wearson, were here, he'd say that's the beauty of community theater. You become a family when you do a play.
Oh, yeah. It's especially cool seeing because we're all from pretty different backgrounds. So it's really cool to meet people that you might not usually interact with.
Well, do you have any statements that might induce people to come and see this version of You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown?
Yes. So everything in the world is crazy right now. There's a lot going on. It's the holidays, so there's a lot of franticness happening in everybody's lives, no matter who you are. And Charlie Brown is wonderful because it is meant for kids. The characters are all 5 years old and or a dog like myself. But the dialogue and the humor, it's aimed at adults. So it's an all ages, all family show. And it's a wonderful opportunity to relive the nostalgia of childhood, but also be able to relate to the show in surprising ways, just about life in general in ways you might not expect. And it is a wonderful break, 2 hours from your hectic, busy life, and a wonderful way to get away. And you don't need a babysitter. You can bring your kids. And I promise you, it is better than whatever you're going to see at the box office right now. I mean, like in the movies.
So what are the dates and times again?
The show runs Friday, December 7th through Sunday, December 16th. And specifically, our Thursday and Friday shows are at 7:30 p.m. And then our Saturday and Sunday shows are at 2 in the afternoon.
Oh, the Saturday show at 2 also then?
Yeah.
And is that primarily, so it's a good time for children?
It's a great time for children, yes.
Okay. And where is Ankeny Community Theater?
Here, Ankeny Community Theater is over on 1932 Southwest 3rd Street. Right off the intersection of State Street and First Street in Ankeny.
I hope you have a wonderful run. It sounds like a fun play and a good way to celebrate the holidays.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
really don't think you have anything to worry about, Charlie Brown.
The only thing
after
wrong
all,
with my big brother, Charlie Brown, is his lack of
Did you know that Charlie Brown has
now,
never
Charlie Brown has what you call
truly a dog's
failure.
Life.
No,
some days I wake up early to watch the sunrise, and I think how beautiful it is and how my life lies before me. And I get a very positive feeling about things. Like this morning, for instance. The sky is so clear and the sun so bright. How could anything go wrong on a day like this? I'm late! A good man, yes, but I confess, I don't know what they mean. I wanna rise like I should and do everything right. But I lie awake at night,
never sleep,
with questions in my ear,
loud and deep.
I wanna join the dance,
take the leap,
but the answer isn't clear. Then I hear,
been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Susan Franzen, and I've been your host for today. Other voices you heard were Dennis Hart, Pat Schlarbaum, Margaret James, Mark Hewen, Brenda Brink, and Melody DeRogatis. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. There are also rebroadcasts of this morning's show at noon and 7 p.m. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Veni Emmanuel from the CD Non Silentium, and opening from You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown from the CD of the 1999 Broadway Revival. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just look for the yellow donate button. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. We encourage you to shop local this holiday season. You can support Ames' growth while enjoying a wide array of local shopping and dining experiences that Ames independent businesses have to offer. From the Ames Chamber of Commerce, happy holidays. Let's shop local and grow Ames.
Support for KHOI is provided in part by Stevens Auditorium, presenting The Nutcracker, Saturday, December 8th at 1:30 and 7:30 p.m., and Sunday, December 9th at 1:30 p.m. Tickets and more information can be found at center.iastate.edu.